This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon.
There can be no compromise with terror. Philippine security forces have the right and the duty to protect local communities and to defeat terrorism in every form. In the war on terror, the U.S.-Philippines military alliance is a rock of stability in the Pacific.
President Bush speaking today to the Philippine Congress in Manila. NPR senior news analyst Dan Shore joins us now. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, Scott.
And Dan, the president yesterday began a six-day, six-country tour of the region. He has been to Japan. Today's in the Philippines on his way to Thailand, where he'll attend the Asia-Pacific Economic Summit in Bangkok, then go on to Singapore, Indonesia, Australia finally. If I might put it this way, all the continents in all the world, what puts Mr. Bush in Asia now and why?
Well, first of all, it's been something of a tradition having his Asia-Pacific Economic Summit. This time he has special things he'd like to do if he can, and that's to get Japan and China to readjust their currencies to help American exports. He's not likely to get very much there. Then there was the discussion of terrorism. You heard the president talk about that in Manila. And there have been terrorist acts in the Philippines, bombings, Bali, Jakarta, and so on. And so that becomes a big issue now also for Asia. And then, as he does everywhere, an appeal for money, for troops, for Iraq, other than Japan, which has just pledged $1.5 billion, Southeast Asia has not been terribly forthcoming.
The president, of course, hopes that that might change after Thursday's unanimous passage of the U.S.-backed U.N. resolution on Iraq. U.S. was forced to make some changes after a number of countries expressed dissatisfaction with the draft. How many, what kind of concessions did they make, and will it make a difference?
Well, the principal concession was that the United States had to yield somewhat, had to yield a good deal, in fact, to demands from others in the United Nations for an early turnover of power to the Iraqi government. The compromise that they settled on, where they set December 15th as a deadline for what? A deadline to then fix a timetable for a constitution and for elections. But I'll tell you, Scott, getting that unanimous vote in order symbolically to be back in league with all our friends and involves a very, very fancy piece of American diplomacy. First, it appears they got China somehow to agree to support the American resolution. I don't know how. And then Russia, whose President Putin has been more recently at Camp David, palling it up with President Bush, followed through. And once Russia and China were there, then Germany and France felt they had to go along. And finally, Syria, which ordinarily would not have voted for that, but didn't want to be the odd man out, and they got on the bandwagon. So the resolution in itself doesn't do very much, but symbolically it becomes very important, and especially because it came just in time for votes in the U.S. Congress on aid for Iraq.
Well, because the Senate voted to convert half of the $20 billion grant that the president had requested for reconstruction in Iraq into a loan. The premise of those who supported that is that an oil-rich country like Iraq should repay the money. Why is there resistance to giving reconstruction money under those terms? And do you think the president will prevail in the end and make it have it become grants, not loans?
Well, to answer your second question first, the president got his way in the House. He did not get his way in the Senate. But the thing goes into conference now, and that Senate vote to give half of $10 billion in the form of a loan is not likely to survive. The question of why all the resistance to giving the money in grants is a very interesting one. It is that Americans are beginning to turn against the idea of putting all this money into Iraq. You hear people saying, here Iraq has all this oil money, they can build their own. Why can't we build our roads instead of their roads? Why don't we have American schools and American power lines instead of pouring all that money into Iraq? That puts Congress under increasing pressure from districts and states at home, and the administration had to do a lot of very, very heavy lobbying with Congress to get this vote, but apparently they will get it this time.
That does raise the question more than obliquely about the discussion in Congress this week about new Medicare legislation. At issue is whether seniors of more means should pay more for services that are currently provided to all seniors for the same price. You covered the instigation of the Medicare program, didn't you?
Yes, you remember. July 1st, 1966, the press conference in Baltimore launching Medicare, which was in my domain at CBS.
Okay. Well, what's this debate about now at this point, this discussion?
Well, what's happening is that the President and Congress dearly want to have a prescription drug benefit that would help everybody. Americans are so anxious to have it. But they are appalled by what the cost of it would be. It apparently would be well over the $400 billion that was originally estimated. So the Senate and the House have bills somewhat different. They're in conference. They hoped to have a compromise by yesterday, Friday. They didn't meet that deadline. They're still trying. One idea that they've been discussing would be to have higher income seniors pay higher premiums than other people would pay. The higher income starts at $75,000, where the premiums would then go up as income goes up. Mm-hmm. I tell you, the liberals and the American Association of Retired Persons oppose linking benefits to income, because that would alter the whole basic idea on which Medicare was founded, as a form of social insurance and entitlement for everybody. Meanwhile, premiums are going up next year to $66.60 a month, an increase of more than 13%.
Three Americans killed in the Gaza Strip on Wednesday this week. They were security escorts for two American diplomats. Have Americans become not incidental but actual targets in this conflict?
Well, yes, visibly so. It is very interesting that during all of the intifada of the past 3 years, Americans were left alone as sort of the outside brokers who were not considered as being enemies like the Israelis. And so this comes as a great shock that seems to be now over, and America is drawn in, especially mysterious as to why it was done, because that mission, I understand, was on its way to Gaza to interview Palestinians for Fulbright scholarships. So it was meant as an altogether friendly mission. It's hard to know what exactly what group it was. One speaks of splinter groups and so on. Arafat denounces it and so on. But if the question is America being dragged into this thing more than it has in the past, the answer is yes.
China became the third country to put a man into space this week. Is this start of a new space race, if not between the U.S. and old Soviet Union, China and someone else?
Well, Russia put a man into space 42 years ago. America was shocked. America caught up. America got to the moon and all of that. And it's very strange, 40 years later, to have this thing start. Now, it is true that it's very interesting that China, generally called an underdeveloped country, manages to carry out this feat, which only Russia and the United States have carried out before. Symbolically, very important. Mm-hmm. Communist Party leaders worried about support from their people. Yes, but it's a great symbol.
Dan, Nigel, after just enough a few seconds, because I'm hoping to cut down what you have to say about the baseball playoffs this week. More millions of Americans watched them than in years.
Oh, dear. I'd like to have a lot more time to talk about it, but let me only tell you that I have a lot of sympathy for a Chicagoan under these circumstances. I, of course, come from the Bronx. We're all right.
Thanks, Dan Shore.